Hi, Ms. Ward. Well, I just want to let you know I was really liking your show, Federal Follies, until you posted that terrible four pick your fight like you pick your nose very carefully today. That episode is too fucking long, man. That's too fucking long. Do you know research shows that people tend to prefer shows that are between 15 to 20 minutes in length only? Some of your listeners may be tune in during their daily commute, which is around 30 minutes. The longest podcast is in New York City, which averages to 38.4 minutes. Cut it down, man. Cut it down. At least to 20 minutes. I hope you take my advice objectively, and by the way, give my regards to your lovely wife, Rocky. I don't know how and why she's putting up with your bullshit. Alright, best regards, and keep up the good work.
The music that you're about to hear tonight is from the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.
Farts are so fragile, they're fashioned from gas. Why must we squeeze just to help them to pass? Yet farts are so strong, once they break in the air, they're a surefire way for a room to get cleared. But if farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff, they'd bounce right back when they fell from your butt. They'd keep their scent so the smell would be rough. If farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff. Farts are so friendly, they follow your tail. Although we can't see them, they leave quite a trail. Farts aren't colored, they're so hard to find, yet they're so fun to light as they leave your behind. But if farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff, they'd bounce right back when they fell from your butt. They'd keep their scent so the smell would be rough. If farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff. Just imagine the free tiny toys they would be. In my pocket I'd keep them to throw at your feet. If farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff, they'd bounce right back when they fell from your butt. They'd keep their scent so the smell would be rough. If farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff, if farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff, they'd bounce right back when they fell from your butt. They'd keep their scent so the smell would be rough. If farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff. If farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff. If only farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff. If farts were made out of Super Bowl stuff, if only farts were made out of Super Bowls.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Federal Follies. This is your host, Nuzord. And I bid you a good evening from Rocky, who does all the button pushing and makes sure everybody can hear everything. Tonight, we're going to talk about just about my favorite topic, lesbians. Oh, do I love lesbians. But anyways, tonight's episode is Never Piss Off the Office Lesbian. But before I get into that, I think we've established sort of a personal relationship at this point. And you know, I confided in the, you know, in the audience the last time that we weren't able to quite get on schedule because of that chronic case of jock itch. Well, you know, that's been resolved, thank God for modern medicine. But, you know, if it isn't one thing, it's the other thing. So my new problem is flatulence. I don't know what to do about it, but I'll tell you, it's kind of fun. Because, you know, you'll be in a group and you let it go, you know, they kind of give you a look and a stare as though, what's going on with this person? But it's just another medical condition that I kind of have. So now I've had crotch rot and flatulence. You know, I'm kind of feeling like Moses. You know when he went to the Pharaoh and said you're going to be plagued by the frogs and the insects and everything. I don't know what's happening next. You know, one week it's crotch rot, the next week it's flatulence. I don't know what's going to happen next week, but I will tell you, Rocky has gone to CVS, and she's going to give me some medicine to cure this flatulence stuff. But I'll tell you, it is distracting. And not only is it distracting, it's destructive. I can't tell you how many skid marks I have left in my drawers and have had to throw those underwear out. Well, anyways, there I go again. I'm always diversing and getting out of hand here. So anyways, I'm going to go now. Now that I've given you my medical update, I'm going to go and what's this? Address the avid fan. Oh, you know, I got to tell you something. We were listening to the responses, you know, because we're kind of interested in how you guys feel about us and everything. Some flying, screaming asshole. I don't know. They call up and they tell me that it's too long. Well, anyways, you'll hear from this asshole later. And I just hope that you feel as I do, that this guy is breathing my flatulence, and somehow it has fucked up his head. Because he is saying stuff that is absolutely unreasonable. He's telling me I should cut it down to 20 minutes. I can't fart in 20 minutes, so I certain hell I can't do a show in 20 minutes. So anyways, stick with me, please. I am not going to go 20 minutes. I'm going to go longer and longer and longer. And hey, if you don't like it, don't listen. So anyways, I'm going to get back to my favorite subject now. And we're going to go into today's parable. And it's parable number 5. And it's never piss off the office lesbian. So, boy, do I love lesbians. Anyways, I digress once again. Here we go. Kevin Fitzhugh, he's a buddy of mine, is this big, stupid Irishman with blazing red hair and a square face dominated by a really broad smile and a mouth full of these huge white teeth, you know, like jaws or something. He is best described as this goofy mass of good-looking, good-natured congeniality, totally running amok. This is so because the good law saw fit to substitute a grape for his brain. The guy really is stupid, but he's a good friend of mine. Anyways, it has been said that if brains were cotton, Kevin Fitzhugh would have difficulty placing a Tampax on a flea. You know something? Maybe a half a flea. But I'm absolutely convinced the Lord installed a low-watt power plant in Kevin either to get even with mankind because we're trying to melt the Arctic Circle, or because he woke up one morning in a snit and decided he couldn't make it through another fucking day without a good laugh. So the good Lord was up there going, I'm gonna fuck with these people. Anyways, God being God, and, you know, being God, he can do whatever the fuck he wants. He wrote himself a prescription for a good yuck and installed a very, very small brain in a very large body and unleashed it upon a very unsuspecting world. If thunder is an angel clapping, then rain is God laughing so fucking goddamn hard he floods Missouri in, you know, New Orleans. I'm also convinced that when God decided to fuck with mankind by allowing Kevin to contribute to the gene pool, he also decided to amuse himself by fucking with me, yours truly, Newzoid, for all that unauthorized bathroom activity with my sister's pantyhose back in my formative preteen years. You know, he couldn't... Anyways, he made Kevin my best friend, and I'm sure he had a luck and a yuck doing it. It also seems like the good Lord always compensates those he shortchanges. For example, I think he gave me a good sense of humor in compensation for making me shorter than the mayor of Oz. You know, Oz, you know, like, a, you know, like, we're off to see the wizard, the wonderful wizard of Oz, because all the wonderful things he does. You know, that Oz. Anyways, he compensated Kevin for being a moron by giving him an overabundance of charm that endears him to just about everyone. Having a very likable and unique personality, if not somewhat quirky, enabled Kevin to squirm out of all sorts of trouble that his limited intellectual capabilities frequently managed to get him into. I'm telling you, he's not the sharpest blade in the drawer. But anyways, he relies heavily on the fact that nobody seems to be able to stay mad at him for very long. And that includes me. And he became very, very adept at using this gift to preserve interpersonal relationships with a very foxy wife. How he got it, I don't know, but his wife is foxy. And he also uses that charm to beguile his friends and his fellow workers. Rhiannon Reynolds was known to a select few of her male co-workers by the moniker Nabby. You like that word? Nabby. I like it. Pronounced Nabby. She always thought it was just a nickname, but a select few of us knew the truth. It stood for nice ass and big boobs. The letter Y was tagged on to the end of the word to make sure she never figured it out. She was the topic of endless guy conversations. A single water cooler interrogative, "Have you seen Nabby today?" would result in legions of horny male federal employees abandoning their important duties to scurry about the building in hopes of capturing a quick peek at whatever body part was on display for that particular day. Mondays seemed to be cleavage day. That was my favorite day. Well, it was every day was my favorite day with Nabby, but Mondays was nice because she showed a lot of tea. But I love going to work on Mondays. On Tuesdays and Wednesdays, you could always count on a crotch shot. You know, and with the aviators, with their kind of sharper vision, they were able to report the color of the panties. I always checked first with the aviators, hoping that they're going to report black lace. But often it was just kind of mundane white. But on Tabby, white looked good too. On Thursdays, she usually wore these high stem heels, you know, and a short leather skirt to show off the legs. Nice legs. It seemed like Thursday was the most dangerous day for the older, heart attack prone guys. I think it was her walking up the staircase in those high heels and the miniskirt that proved too much for them. They'd be looking at that butt going up the steps, and, you know, I think it did a few of them in. Fridays were a major disappointment. You know, can you believe it? Freaking slacks. They should outlaw slacks. Personal opinion, not fact. But anyways, we did a lot of drinking on Fridays because we weren't going to chase around a pair of slacks. You know, nothing to look at. Anyways, we all had a very wicked yet healthy fantasy sex life with Nabby. But nobody was more hot to trot with her than Kevin. You know, my brainless buddy. He might not have been the sharp knife in the drawer, but there was nothing wrong with Kevin's vision. However, he was prone to processing all visual stimuli regarding the female with his little head, and pretty much reduced whatever limited capability resided in the big head to managing the anatomic body functions associated with, like, breathing and pumping blood to the little head, as may be required to maintain an erection. He was a man, though, who had a vision of what could be. Before having a vision of what could be was considered critical for federal managers. It's kind of funny, isn't that? A guy with a brain the size of a pea was 10 years ahead of the federal government. Well, what does that tell you about the fucking federal government? What's smaller than a pea? Okay. Anyways, Christmas was a Saturday, and we all elected to have our office Christmas party on the previous Thursday after work. Remember Thursdays? It was crotch shot day. We sure in hell weren't going to have that party on Friday with Tabby, you know, with Nabby wearing slacks. It had to be crotch shot day. Anyways, we had our Christmas party that Thursday. And we all wondered if Nabby would be wearing the candy cane panties or the sugar plum fairy panties. That was pretty important to us. I was kind of hoping for the sugar plum fairy panties because I have a good appetite. Anyways, we had the party on the second floor of this World War II barracks that was converted to office space. You know, the desks and the file cabinets had been moved into the area, yet so we just set up three long folding tables. One table was for the food, two tables for the booze. That was when booze was an important part of all federal functions. Now, booze is not allowed at federal functions. Have we regressed? Now, this was the day before political correctness, when management could afford to encourage their employees to sort of kick back and get smashed at the office Christmas party. You know, make some unreasonable advances at the secretary, tell a boss to go fuck himself. All of that stuff was forgotten the next day. Those were the good old days. The days when federal service was fun. Anyways, we had an oversupply of booze, and that was a fundamental requirement to every Christmas party. And it inevitably produced those memorable moments. Occasionally, sometimes on film. And that by the next work day, many would wish, oh my God, I didn't do that. It didn't happen. This Christmas, Kevin had just such a Kodak moment. Susan Prophet. Now, Susan was not a fox, but she wasn't a dog either. She was just, you know, like average pretty, a little on the hippie side, you know, a little wide in the girth there, but still doable. She glided about on kind of a very nice set of wheels, nice legs though, with a first quality rack riding high up in front. As a matter of fact, the first thing you saw about Susan was that rack. That got your attention, believe me. aside from Last Call in the Dark Bar, you know, a little help with her hair, maybe, you know, some makeup consultation and counseling, she would be very, very doable, even in a dark bar, even in a lighted room. Of course, back then, we were all so horny, we would do anything. But, short of it, Sue was doable. Anyways, to me, she looked like a gagger. Possibly a swallower, but definitely not a spitter. She wouldn't spit. I mean, if she had a mouthful of shit, she wouldn't spit. So I was thinking Sue was a gagger, but I was hoping she was a swallower. I was more than willing to find out, but I never tried to move on her because she always gave me that look that said, "Don't fuck with me if you don't want your nuts torn off through your asshole and fed to the squirrels." I'm a kind of pretty astute guy, and so I kind of took that look as meaning, "Nah, Bob, you don't want to mess with Sue." For the longest time, I passed it off as she just didn't like smart-ass shot guys. And, you know, I'm a smart-ass shot guy for sure. But when I thought about it a while, other possibilities came to mind. I had known who Susan was and where she worked for the better part of 2 years, and really could not recall her ever being in a social situation with any guys. So, you know, my love of lesbians got me to thinking, and one thing led to the other. And the first thing I'm thinking is Sue's munching on carpets, you know? But anyways, as it happened, I was told just prior to the Christmas party by a reliable source at the water cooler that Susan, and get this, Nabby, shared an apartment. I'm thinking they probably swapped spit. They had to. They were both carpet munchers. Oh, I was in heaven. But, again, I was also shocked. Nabby, a carpet muncher? Oh, I'd pay to watch that. I'd pay twice to watch that. Anyways, I didn't think Kevin had the need to know, so I forgot to tell him all about this. Besides, I knew once he started feeling his holiday buzz after he, you know, had his 10 or 12 beers, he would make a beeline over to Nabby and make a complete idiot out of himself. Total fool. You know, and I just didn't want to spoil the entertainment. It's just too good. You'd have to pay for that in other places. Anyways, it was a good bet that a bear shits in the woods, and a sure bet that Kevin Fitzhugh would totally nail himself whenever the booze is free. I knew he was hammered when he put his arms around me and kissed me on the lips. Disgusting, I know. But at least he didn't try to tongue me. But, you know, it's part and parcel of being best friends with a crazed Irishman. They love to hug. They love to kiss. It's disgusting. And I'm half Irish. So anyways, if you're going to be friends with an Irishman, you got to kind of put up with that stuff. Anyways, it wouldn't have been so bad if it hadn't been for a mouthful of partially chewed egg salad, most of which was on his chin, and the remainder of it was on his shirt. So here's Kevin, this big stupid Irishman with his blazing red hair and egg salad all over his face and his shirt. At this point, Kevin's little head was now in complete charge. He had zeroed in on the boobies, and there was no distracting Kevin. He was like a train on the tracks. There was no oxygen-bearing blood was being allocated to his big head. Every thought-enabling molecule was being redirected to the needs of that little head. Off he went in search of Nabby, her legs and her tits and her ass. Anyways, my boss, he's a pretty good guy, and I positioned ourselves close to the beer tap. And within 12 feet of the soon-to-unfold black comedy. You know, see, we knew everybody there. We knew who was going to fuck up. We wanted to get a good seat, and at the same time, we didn't want to be too far away from the beer keg. So we positioned ourselves just right, and you know, Kevin came forth, doing his best to charm those reindeer panties off Nabby. Then again, how did he know that Nabby had reindeer panties? You know, it's his charm. Anyways, his hard-headed persistency, get the joke, hard-headed persistency, that's the little head, and an Irish, you know, charm, actually got Nabby to laugh a couple of times, and when she got up and danced with him, the shock caused me to choke on a pit from a black olive. I nearly died. He's my best friend. He almost killed me. Little black olive. Working for the federal government's dangerous. Anyways, my boss immediately recognized my life-threatening situation and promptly administered first aid. He pretended to spit in my ear, then slapped me on the back with one hand while thrusting another beer at me with the other. Thank God he got that other beer to me. He saved my life. Well, anyways, that crisis soon passed when that offensive olive pit was discharged onto the floor and my damaged throat restored to good order by Dr. Budweiser. You know, they say aspirin is a miracle drug. Not as good as Budweiser. Oh, I'm off the line again. Let me get back. Anyways, you know, that near-death experience went completely, completely unobserved by Kevin, Susan, you know, the so-so one, and Nabby, the hot one. Anyways, sometime during my medical emergency, the three of them had become engaged in a rapidly escalating brouhaha. You know, I was well positioned by the beer keg and I missed the beginning of the brouhaha, but I came in on the escalation of the brouhaha, and what apparently happened is Sue didn't really like the idea of Nabby and Kevin slow dancing, especially when Kevin starts placing his hands on Nabby's butt and pulling her pelvis into his boner. Well, you know the commercial slogan, reach out and touch somebody? Well, that was about to assume a whole new meaning for Kevin. Even after 4 hours of fairly high-powered drinking, it was pretty transparent to everybody at the party, anybody, those who were still standing, except maybe Kevin, of course, because, you know, he had that little pea brain, whose insight is often dulled by the lack of oxygen going to the big brain anyways, that Susan and Nabby were romantically connected. Carpet munches. The two of them. Susan and Nabby. I'd pay to see that. Anyways, they had to be committed munches. Lesbians. Dykes. Lovers. Whatever. Believe me, I really couldn't give a weasel shit about the girls' sexual preferences other than maybe getting myself all worked up about the possibility of a wild menage a trois. The fun meter was about to redline. Susan stood up, you know, and skipjacked over to the hottest couple on the dance floor. They both appeared enjoying the moment. Nabby didn't appear to be too embarrassed in the least, or even much concerned, about the placement of Kevin's hands, which by this time had gathered sufficient information to construct a contour map of about 99.9% of Nabby's geographic area. In fact, both parties were fully engaged, and neither noticed Susan or the rage in her eyes. The fun meter was redlined. Susan grabbed Nabby's long hair with both hands in a white knuckle death grip and started dragging her across the floor. It was like Fred Flintstone era. The whole time, poor Nabby is struggling to regain her balance, you know, when she's in high heels, legs flopping all over the place, repeatedly screaming, "What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?" Every jaw in the room was resting on the floor. I mean, we're all in stunned silence. We work with these guys, these ladies. Some of us, believe me, some of us, me included, actually stopped drinking. Of course, that was only momentarily. Kevin just stood there with this great, big, gaping mouth, looking more confused than I have ever seen him before. And believe me, I have seen Kevin pretty confused. But Nabby kept regaining and losing her balance as Susan hauled her by her hair across the room, en route to the ladies' room. The yelling and the screaming from inside the ladies' room could be clearly heard from anywhere in the room. In what seemed like a very long time, but was actually only kind of a short few minutes, Susan emerged from the ladies, from the ladies' room all alone. Calm, cool, collected. No problem. But every eye was fixed on her as she walked in a straight line directly up to Kevin. She stopped just inches from him. Kevin started to open his mouth, but before he could mouth a single word, Susan went off and slapped him right across the face with more force than many of the men in the room would have been able to muster. Of course, they were all fucked up anyways, but believe me, Susan walloped them, really smacked them. He stood there in stunned silence, just looking very stupid. Well, let me correct myself. Looking more very stupid than his normal very stupid. Anyways, she began yelling and cursing at him. When her rage finally peaked, the truth found its target. No, she screams. "You only call me when you want to get fucking laid." She began crying and sobbing. That great rack, those titties heaving up and down as she tried to catch her breath. Then the rest of us, we're there going, "Wow, the truth has found its mark." She half cried and half screamed, "I'm pregnant!" She turned and ran from the room. So, I'm going, wait a minute. I'm thinking, Susan's pissed because she's munching Nabby. And she's mad at Nabby because Nabby's allowing Kevin to feel her up. But that's not it at all. Susan gets knocked up by Kevin. She's not munching Nabby at all. Man, now I kind of felt kind of stupid. I should have known that. But anyways, by now Nabby had left the ladies' room and had intercepted Susan just before Susan was to exit the hall. They spoke very briefly and then left together. I'm going, now what's happening here? Anyways, we all decided it would be a waste of good beer to leave the party. So we sat down, drank more beer, and discussed the events of the evening in some detail, mostly surmising what was going to happen over the next couple of hours between Susan and Nabby. My personal erotic fantasy was that they were going to make mad passionate love and film it and make it available to the rest of us. Nobody else seemed to have that. Anyways, many hours later that evening, we discovered the rest of the truth. You know something? neither Nabby nor Susan were dykes. The whole dyke thing was just one of those really ugly rumors, you know, happens in government all the time, that seems to take on a life of its own, and it's kind of self-perpetuating, and it's kind of crispy, so it has long legs. You know, and then in a couple of weeks, we kind of knew that the Christmas party brouhaha would be old news, and the topic of the day changed to some other smoldering stupidity. You know, somebody in federal government was going to do something fucking stupid, and we'd have a laugh about that. But anyways, Susan eventually did have her baby, and she did leave federal government. And you know, Kevin is still making child support payments, big, big time. You know, Nabby and I ended up working in the same office, and you know, funny thing how things happen. We got involved, we got engaged, and didn't mean it to happen, but we eventually even got married. And you know, 6 years, almost to the date after we're married, here's the truly funny part. 6 years, almost to the date after we were married, she left me for another woman. Can you imagine that? She was a pussy eater. I knew it all the time. I consoled myself by knowing that I was right when everybody else was wrong. So, it worked out. I was right. Anyways, the morning she told me she was leaving me, which also happened to be the morning she left me, I got pissed off. Not because she was leaving me, but because of finances and all the other shit. And I just called her a fucking dyke. And followed up that unfortunate gaffe with the only reason that there wasn't a bounty on you was because you sucked good dick. But now that you'll be eating pussy, you lose your protected status. To this day, I regret saying those words. You know, and I regretted them even sooner for the momentary lapse of my sensitivity, because after quitting work that morning, she returned home, our home, the home we shared, and proceeded to completely trash my painstakingly restored 1958 Oldsmobile Holiday Rocket 88 convertible. A beautiful car. She trashed it beyond any possible recovery. A term often used by federal employees to describe the work situation is FUBAR, pronounced FUBAR. This is federal employee secret code for fucked up beyond all repair, and that's what she did to my beautiful 1958 Oldsmobile Holiday Rocket 88 convertible. So I'm sure you have learned the lesson already. And the lesson is, never piss off the office lesbian. I pissed off the office lesbian and lost my beloved Oldsmobile Holiday Rocket 88 convertible. So I admonish you all, respect your office lesbians, because if you don't, they will get you. That's the lesson for tonight. I want to thank Rocky for her technical stuff. Pretty soon, when we start to go to part two, which is 6 episodes away, we'll be using some advanced electronics equipment, and she's going to do all of that button pushing and finagling and wiring and all of that, all of the technical stuff she likes to do. You know, I'm a guy. I don't like that shit. I like to read about lesbians. She likes to look at all that other shit. So anyways, next week, we're going to do another parable, though. And next week's parable is, nothing is ever as it first appears. Nothing is ever as it first appears. So that'll be the parable next week. I'll also have a health update. Because as you know, I've been cured of the chronic jock itch, but now have a severe case of flatulence. We're hoping to cure that. And when we cure that, I don't know what else will strike me. I think it's because I'm doing this show. God's punishing me, you know, like Moses punished all those other people. And I'm sure I've exceeded my time limit. So I'm going to bid you all good night. And remember, next week we'll have a new parable. Hope you enjoyed tonight's parable. Good evening and goodbye. This is Newsort.